The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
The more the world changes, the more we find comfort in the things that never change. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, On Demand, on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome, all you happy warriors, eager devotees of this, the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, spiritually grounded in everything that is life-affirming, devoted to your faith, your families, your finances, and your friends, knowing that you can triumph over those who both intentionally and unknowingly promote a dark abyss of satanic secular socialism and all the many evil social pathologies it generates. When I reveal how the world really works, it's in the hope that you will help me defeat those pathetic creatures of modern secular fundamentalism, those orphans in history who possess neither Christian fortitude nor even pagan ferocity, which would almost be welcome, those hideous hermaphrodites and fanatical feminists running our media, education, and government bureaucracies, who possess neither the strength of men nor the intuitive wisdom of women. But oh, what damage they manage to inflict. But never fear, here on the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, I solemnly commit to help you transform timidity to triumph. Together we will replace diffidence with determination and displace the divided councils of doubt with the steady eyes and firm hearts of those who, just like us, know where they are going and know just how they're going to get there. Yes, we strive for success, first with our families and our faith, then our finances and our friends, forming bonds of the like-minded, after which we will be ready to take on the formidable task of saving our frighteningly fragile civilization from those who would force us to surrender our freedoms and our souls to the whims and dictates of those who consider themselves to be our superiors, our elites, our betters, our bosses, and our rulers. But before we change the world, we have to change ourselves. And that's really what this show is all about. We're changing ourselves. And one of the ways we do that is by developing an accurate picture of how the world really works. It makes it much easier then to make the necessary changes in ourselves and in our families and in our lives to bring about the desired conclusion. Well, one of the areas that is, I think, an area in which the population is kept deliberately in the dark is how money works, the nature of business, the nature of wealth creation. And whilst one can never indict someone else because of what one believes is the motivation of the other side, one can certainly indict an action or inactivity, in this case, a flagrant failure to provide any measure of education at all in kindergarten through 12th grade about money and wealth and creation of wealth and business and budgeting and taxation. No, none of these things are mentioned at all. They're not discussed. And my belief, I have no evidence for this, my belief is that the reason for that is that financial illiteracy on the part of a population makes it a population easier to enslave with the seductive promises of security by the government. And so As long as people know little about money and understand even less, they become much more vulnerable to the enticements that are beamed out from government all the time. What? You did not get a free Obama phone? Oh, you got three of them. Oh, well, then that's all right. That's good. That's right. You know, when children are asked to describe what their fathers and mothers do in occupations, there are some occupations that children find very easy to explain, and there are others that are extraordinarily difficult. When children are asked to explain what their father, a policeman, does, it's easy for a child to say. I mean, everyone knows what a policeman does. What does a soldier do? Yeah, I can explain that. That's easy. Taxi driver? Sure. Fireman? Oh, that's a good one. Right? What kid doesn't wish his father was a fireman? Always easy to explain that. And bus driver? Yeah, of course. Easy. Pilot? Yeah, great one. I mean, nobody says pilot. What do they do? Right, that's clear. A builder. Right, my father builds houses. My father builds buildings. Fine, got it, perfect. My father's a teacher. Okay, all very straightforward, easy to explain. But what do we do when the child says, my father is a real estate broker? And then we say, well, what exactly does your father or your mother, the real estate broker, do? And it's a little harder to understand, right? Well, he sells houses or buildings. Well, when my father wanted to sell our car, he just put an ad on the internet, and then people came and somebody bought it. Like, why doesn't the owner of the building just sell it? What does your father do exactly when you say he's a real estate broker? It's a problem. Your parent is a chief executive officer, the head of a company. Well, what do they do? Well, last time my father took me to work on Take Your Kid to Work Day, well, he sort of sat behind a desk and he spoke to a lot of people on the phone. And then a few people came in and poked their head in and asked him questions and he answered. And then he had lunch with a friend and they took me as well and I had ice cream. And then after lunch, he came back and spoke to more people on the phone. Really? And that's what he does? Yeah, that's what he does. My father's a wholesale merchant. Really? And what does he do? I really don't. I really haven't the faintest idea. My mother or my father is an investment banker. What do they do? What do they do? My father is a job recruiter. What does he do? Well, he helps people find jobs, and he helps places that need workers find workers. Well, why do they need your father? Why don't the places that need workers put an advertisement? When my mom needed a nanny for us, she just put an advertisement in the paper and then, or the internet, and then a nanny came. So places that need workers should just put an advertisement up, and then people who need jobs will apply. I don't understand what your father, a recruiter, actually does. It's as if we have two categories of occupations here, right? One category of occupations, and I'm sure you could add to it extensively, as could I, are these jobs like, you know, bus driver or fireman or pilot that are really easy to explain, right? I'm a carpet cleaner. Okay, I really don't need a lot of explanation. I know exactly what you do. It's simple and straightforward. But then you've got this other whole category of occupations that are a whole lot more complicated. hard to explain. I'm a sales professional. What do you do? Well, I go and visit stores that carry the products of my employer, and I encourage them to purchase items that their customers would appreciate and would want to purchase from them. Well, why don't they just pick up the phone and order them from your employer? What's your role exactly? Well, my role, I can tell you, must be pretty important because it pays very well. Yeah, sales professionals make very good money, so they should, because they play an absolutely vital role in commerce. Yeah, but what is that role? Well, it's not that easy, is it? We seem to have categories, jobs and occupations that are self-explanatory, and others that seem to require a great deal of explanation. They're not at all easy to understand. What exactly does a CEO do, the head of a company, particularly to justify very often stratospheric salaries? Well, let's take a look at the Ford Motor Company in 2005-2006. It was such a disaster that its share price got down to about a dollar. Now, right now, at the time I'm preparing this show, it's, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of $10. But before that, it had been up closer to 20. And now it was down to like a dollar. Ford was viewed almost as junk status investment. And 2006, it had a $13 billion loss. Imagine what that means for a major car company, billions of $13 billion loss. People thought it would file for bankruptcy. It really was largely over. And one of the problems is that the company was not really a car company anymore. It had become essentially a pension fund company for accumulated pension liabilities over the years. And more seriously, it had become a finance company, Ford Finance, where in good times, people had borrowed large sums of money to buy their Ford cars. And of course, time went by, and as things deteriorated, loans went bad, and that dragged Ford down completely. So what did they do? What they needed was a CEO. Now, is a CEO just somebody who comes with knowledge, technique, experience? No. A CEO has to come with credibility, reputation. He's got to be somebody who builds up the faith of everybody in the company, from line workers on the assembly, you know, all the way up to board members, all the way up. And so what they did is they went and found a guy called Alan Mulally, who for 37 years had been at Boeing in Seattle. And he had a spectacular record. And that's why track record is so important. Because when Ford hired Mulally as the CEO, they didn't know that his knowledge that he had acquired in the aero industry at Boeing would apply at Ford. He didn't know, you know, they didn't know that, but they knew that he was somebody who would be able to build the faith back of the company. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. 3 months after he became CEO, he became CEO, I think, in September 2006, and in November, before the end of the year, he stood before representatives of several of the major banks in the country. And what had happened was that the Ford was in such bad shape that in order to just sort of pick things up, they needed about $25 billion. That's a lot of money. That's what they needed. And nothing had yet changed. All that had happened was his name had gone up on the CEO's door, and the news reports went out that he had accepted the position as CEO at Ford, and Alan Mulally spoke to the banks 10 days later 10 days later, they gave him $24 billion. And you know, from then on, he started putting things right and building it up. But people were inspired, and Ford was restored. And this is just one of so many. Literally, I mean, I could do an entire book on cases where seemingly hopeless business situations were rectified by the right person in the top job. Not because he was a technocrat, not because he came with all kinds of specific background and experience, but because of the totality of his being. And that he was able, and this was in Ford and in many, many other companies, the person coming in was able to fill everybody with faith. Let's keep at this. We can make this work. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. So I will explain as we move a little bit forward in the show then, as we move towards me giving you three specific spiritual strategies for the purpose of expanding and growing and developing your business, no matter what it is. Even if you think you're actually an employee, not an entrepreneur, I want you to start rethinking and begin to see yourself as an entrepreneur. And I'll explain more about that just as soon as we come back. You know, most of the times when I promote for your attention products that we have created for you here at Life Codex Publishing, they are usually electronic digital downloads, because if you're listening to the podcast, that's probably something you're comfortable and familiar with. And so today, however, I want to stress something else, and that is the pleasure of holding a book in your hand, the pleasure of being able to mark up the book, the pleasure of being able to fold down a page if you want, or tuck in a relevant piece of paper on which you've made some other notes. But when you hold a book in your hands, there are things you can do, especially if you have a markup, you know, a yellow highlighter with you. And so I want to suggest that you take a look at some of the books we have available. Why? Because right now, for the next few days, there is a free shipping deal. So you don't pay any shipping. That's, by the way, in the United States of America. Make a note of the code you will use in order to get the free shipping offer. It's ship free. Okay, S-H-I-P-F-R-E-E, one word. And take a look. You know, there is a collection of thought tools. Take a look at those. They're enormously useful. Then, of course, there is buried treasure, but I'll tell you more about that a little bit later. For now, let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to be right back.
Ancient solutions to modern problems. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand, on the Blaze Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and Retirement Curveball is a book by a finance expert that I respect, Dr. Tom McPhee. Whether you are thinking about retirement, are already retired, or have never given the big R even a thought, now is the time to welcome the contents of this book into your mind. The book is filled with compelling aha moments and will motivate you to make some highly effective changes in how you manage your money and your life. I know Dr. Tom McPhee and his terrific book, Retirement Curveball, and I do recommend it. Get the book at retirementcurveball.com or on Amazon.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin returns with more of How the World Really Works on the Blaze Radio Network, on demand.
Welcome back, everybody. Your rabbi, dedicated, no, solemnly dedicated, to revealing how the world really works, especially for you. Now, in the previous segment, I was talking about certain jobs that are difficult to describe. Children have trouble explaining what exactly their mother or father, who's a real estate broker, does. Wholesale merchant, what do they actually do? Investment banker, what do they do? A job recruiter, what do they do? Business broker, what do they do? And children are not at all the only ones who've had trouble explaining that. The great Austrian or German economist Friedrich Hayek, The Road to Serfdom, Fatal Conceit, good stuff. He used a phrase that stuck with me. Speaking about the way money is made in less visible ways. In other words, all those other things I was talking about, taxi driver, fireman, pilot, policeman, soldier, teacher, builder, all of those are really clear. You can see the person doing it. And in the past, I've referred to the different ways in which people treat the LeBron James of the world and CEOs, where with LeBron James, with huge sums of money he makes, people say, well, it's understandable. You know, nobody says he's overpaid. But how frequently one hears accounts of CEOs, business leaders, entrepreneurs being overpaid. Why? Well, first of all, they say, oh, well, LeBron James is not going to be able to work forever. Well, a CEO is only as good as his latest triumph. I'm afraid the bench is filled with CEOs who did wonders for one company, failed in the next, and have never been hired since. One need only think of Ron Johnson, who did very well at Target. He was a marketing guy, came to Target, and really beefed up their sales. So from there, Apple hired him, and he came up with the idea of the Genius Bar and making the Apple stores such fun places to visit. All of that Ron Johnson did, and for that he was paid about $30 million a year, which, interestingly enough, is about the same as what LeBron James makes a year. Well, you say, well, Ron Johnson got various stock options as well. In other words, to incentivize him, if he actually raised the value of the share price by the result of his marketing efforts, then he would benefit from that as well. And sure enough, he did. And then, of course, LeBron James has the equivalent of that, which is endorsements. And he makes around about another $30 million on top of his salary out of endorsements. So the similarities between between LeBron James and a CEO are very similar, excepting that after Apple, so there's Ron Johnson doing great at Target. Apple seizes him. He does fantastically, and he's a real hero, makes a lot of money. And then JCPenney hires him. And I don't want to spend too much on the story. It's a great story. It's fascinating and filled with really revealing insights and important principles. But the bottom line is that Ron Johnson was a disaster at JCPenney. The strategies and techniques that he used at Apple simply were not applicable. Apple gets people to pay a very high price for a premium product. Hello, JCPenney, not exactly the same idea. Anyway, you can almost write the script yourself. And from that, as soon as the board of JCPenney fired him, and he's not been offered another job since then. So it's not that different, you see. It's possibly a sports personality reaches a point either age-wise or because he's not performing, exactly like a CEO. And what's Ron Johnson doing these days? When last I checked into it, he'd sort of done a startup. He'd tried to build a marketing consultancy or something. I have no idea how it's going, but I do understand that's, you know, when nobody will hire you, you start your own business. Sometimes it works out well, turns out to be a blessing, sometimes not. But there's no question that he's not making even anything approaching what he made at Apple now that he's, and by the way, JCPenney paid him very highly indeed, although, you know, they quickly saw he wasn't producing and they got rid of him. So the similarities are there, excepting that there are far more criticisms out there in the culture against CEO salaries than you find against sports figure salaries. Again, the reason is exactly what we were talking about, namely that everybody understands what LeBron James does, right? We all of us look at him and say, you know what, I couldn't do that. Firstly, the guy's huge. And secondly, he plays in a way that none of us could do it. So yeah, we understand why he gets the big bucks. But nobody understands what a CEO does. What exactly was Ron Johnson doing? Or for that matter, what was Alan Mulally doing at Ford? Like, how did he spend his day? And as Friedrich Hayek said, the stink of sorcery. It looks like he just, the money just came in a way I don't get. So why should he deserve the big bucks? I mean, if all he does is sit at a desk and talk on the phone and go to lunch, I could do that as well. And so obviously the resentments are real and they build. And this really is one of the main reasons, not the only reason by any means, but it's one of the reasons that there has been anti-Semitism. When I speak about why the world hates the Jews, one of the reasons is that because of ancient Jewish wisdom and because of biblical understanding, Jews have always had a clear insight into how to make money in a way that doesn't necessarily involve tangible objects or tangible actions. And so, you know, throughout history, I think perhaps the longest enduring occupation is farming, right? And farming is arduous labor. So you just imagine an early neighborhood or community or society, and you got the majority of people working on the farm from sunrise to sunset and working hard. And then in 1750, the date I assigned to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, so a number of people moved from the farm to the factories. But again, arduous work. Meanwhile, down the road is some Jew who is living clean hands, no visible toil, and all he's doing is running the local store. He's selling things that are manufactured by some factory where you work, and he's selling them at prices you can't afford. And then he goes home at 5 o'clock, and his shirt is still clean, and his hands are clean. Look, he's living slightly better than you. And that's really where the resentment builds. In other words, most people do not have resentment against the, you know, the hugely far-off, distant, rich people. They're out of reach. And so we don't think to ourselves, well, you know, I could be Warren Buffett or I could be Bill Gates. No, I don't think in those terms. But, you know, how about a person who I sort of think of as basically similar to me, except making twice the money I make? Yeah, you know, that can cause resentment if I allow it to, right? And so there you've got these Jewish storekeepers and, yes, creating enormous resentment. Because when you fall into the trap of believing that we live in only a physical world, a materialistic world, then only things you can see or touch have value, and working and producing those things are being productive. But the Jew in the middle, and it's not always a Jew, by the way, in Kenya it was Indians. On the other side, in West Africa, it was actually Lebanese people were the sort of Jews of West Africa, and East Indians were the Jews of Kenya, and very 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 similar kind of resentment because they look at these people who are living comfortably, maybe more comfortably than they are, and they don't seem to be doing. All they're doing is selling at a markup things that other people create, things that other people build. So this is an enormous fallacy, because you look at these people, and now, you know, back to bankers or merchants, wholesale merchants or brokers, like, what's the broker doing there, right? And you say, look, this is a parasite. He's just overcharging other people. We don't even need him there. That's exactly what we're talking about, meaning that the simpleton, the person who views the world as only a materialistic undertaking, looks at the real estate broker and says, I don't get it. I don't know why we need him. What do we have to pay him 3% or 6% for? Let the buyer go around and look for sale signs, and they can, anyone who wants to sell their house, put a big for sale sign outside, because most people who want to buy a house know roughly the area they want to buy in. So they'll drive around the area. When they see a for sale sign, they go knock on the door, they make a note of the phone number and phone. What do you need brokers for? Why should brokers have to be involved and add to the cost? They are the ones who are adding to the cost of housing. That's the whole problem. And people don't understand that this is not a transaction between a cow and a camel. It's not a transaction between two computers. It's a transaction between two human beings, two spiritual entities. And that means that it becomes rather complicated, because the value now is very difficult to discern. On the one hand, the family that has lived in the house for 25 years, raised their children there, have a house full of happy memories, to them, in their heart, it's worth more than it is to a stranger who sees the house. All he sees are all the changes he's going to have to make and all the repairs he's going to have to do and the modifications he's going to have to do, until it's the place that he wants to live in and make his own memories in. And that emotional disconnect is strong enough to avoid, to almost rule out the possibility of a transaction. The people, they will bristle each other. The buyer and seller will not easily make a deal, and it'll be resentful. Along comes the broker and keeps them apart. He talks to the buyer, he talks to the seller, he helps move each person in the direction of the transaction that both want, and he makes it happen because he can remove the emotional involvement, the emotional areas. So that's one aspect of why we need the broker involved. But it gets to be considerably more interesting, I think, as we look a little bit more deeply into how it is that as a society or a culture becomes more and more materialistic, as a society and culture abandon any form of spiritual connection, when they obliterate any religious transcendence, the end result is you move towards materialism. And when you're a materialistic person, envy builds up, because the more materialistic you are, the less capable you are of understanding how money is really made. All right, we're going to go to a quick break. The website is rabbidaniellappin.com. Got it? rabbidaniellappin.com. And if you head over there, take a look at the book section, because the real books we've got, and some, I mean, Thou Shalt Prosper, Business Secrets from the Bible, Buried Treasure, Thought Tools Volume 1, 2, and 3, Hands Off, This May Be Love. There are many, many books on our site, some of which are really going to be useful to you, either as gifts or as conversation centerpieces for your family and for your friends. And here's the nice thing. Right now, for a few days, we've got a free shipping deal going on. So that means you can buy big, heavy things like books and not pay for their shipping, as long as you live in the United States. And the code to use there is SHIPFREE, all right? S-H-I-P-F-R-E, SHIPFREE, you got it. So have a look at rabbidaniellappin.com. Go to the store, go to the book section of the store, and buy away for your pleasure and mine. Your Rabbi, That's Me, back with you in just a moment.
You're listening to Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand, on the Blaze Radio Network. Find more at theblaze.com/radio. With stories in the areas of family, friendship, faith, and finance, this is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, only on the Blaze Radio Network, on demand.
So, here we are, back together again, the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, moving forward as we reveal how the world really works. And sadly, one of the ways the world really works is that people who have been reduced to materialistic beings develop resentments against those who make money. And so, sure enough, what happened? In August 1965, in Los Angeles, there was a really bad guy. He had quite a record, and he was actually on parole for armed robbery when he was stopped for speeding recklessly in a car, and his mom, one of the passengers in the car ran to call his mother, and his mother came, and one thing led to another, and there were 6 days of rioting in Los Angeles, August 65. And the damage was tremendous. There were deaths. The property damage was huge. And among the people who suffered most heavily in the property damage were all the Jewish store owners in that area of Los Angeles known as Watts. And Jews had set up stores in that area, in the 40s and 50s. And so here comes 1965, and again, you know, it's a sad thing. If you're going to riot, it would be nice to riot over a saint, you know, Joan of Arc. Okay, I'll take a pitchfork into the street. But over a small-time robber who really victimized almost everybody he came into contact with, and on account of him, the neighborhood goes up in flames for 6 days, and in a way, that area has never really recovered. What happened? Well, for a start, Jewish store owners, it was almost as if the crowd vented its hatred and its resentment and its angers on these people who operated the stores. And if you look at some of the Los Angeles Times reports of the period, you'll see that there were a number of black people in the area who said, quite correctly, you know, who said they were sorry this happened. You know, it wasn't them, obviously. And they said, you know, these Jews operated stores in our neighborhoods where nobody else did. They extended credit to us. They were always helpful. And now they're gone. And sure enough, they never came back. They never rebuilt there. And for some of them, it turned into a real financial tragedy and tremendous hardship. But anyway, that ended that. The Jews never did come back there, but the Koreans did. And the Koreans set up stores and again began serving the community. And all was well until April 1992, when another horrible human being called Rodney King — you'll notice, by the way, liberal media usually describe him as motorist Rodney King — but he was strung out on a severe form of drug and resisting arrest. And sure enough, once again, no Joan of Arc, I can tell you, another riot, destroying the neighborhood, destroying houses, and yes, destroying the Korean stores. And they left as well after that. Why take out the vengeance and the anger on the stores? Precisely for this reason. When you've become a thoroughly materialistic human being, when really there is no longer any spirituality in your life. An almost inevitable accompaniment to that is that you no longer are able to understand the spirituality of money. You're no longer able to understand that money exists and money is created and wealth is built when human beings serve one another. And that one of the ways of serving one another is by running a store. Another way of serving one another is by securing financing for other businesses. And you can call yourself an investment banker, or you might be a wholesale merchant. Whatever it is, you're doing things that are not easily explainable. It's not like saying I drive a bus. When you say that I am a loan broker or a mortgage broker, it's hard to explain what that is and why it's necessary. And why aren't you a parasite just adding cost onto the system without producing anything? And for that reason, Stalin killed millions of Russian middlemen. And people went along with it. Yeah, he was doing something good because prices will come down. Well, what really happened was hunger and starvation, because prices not only didn't come down, but the goods vanished because the people who used to bring them from the farms to the market had been wiped out and obliterated. And so it all boils down to that one most important existential question of humanity. And that is, how did we human beings arrive on this planet? And if you're going to rule out the theory that little green men came in spaceships and put us here, which I think it's quite safe to do, it only leaves us two choices. One choice is that the good Lord created us in his image and put us here. That's one choice, right? Can't prove it. It's a choice. The other choice, and the only other choice, is that through a lengthy process of unaided materialistic evolution, primitive protoplasm turned into peanut peelers and pretzel twisters. That's the only other choice. One way or another, either we are here with God or we're here without him. Those are the two choices. And if you adopt the second choice, that we're here without God, that we are just an entirely materialistic existence, we are nothing but the result of random evolutionary mutations, that we are nothing more than a few dollars worth of common chemicals, then in that case, eventually we are going to become people who cannot deal with money. And so it's not an accident that every atheistic regime has had a collapsed economy. They can't keep it going. Not possible. And every effective generator of wealth has had something that links them to the spiritual. Always been that way and always will be that way. And so, that being the case, the reality is that money is at its root a spiritual thing. You can't put your finger on it, can you? After all, is money those discs of metal in your pocket? Or is it strips of colored paper in your wallet? Or is it the orientation of iron oxide molecules in that brown magnetic strip behind your credit card? Or is it ones and zeros at your bank's computer? Or is it when you take a check and you write it out to John Smith for $10 and you give it to him, is that money? Or how about if you don't write anything, if you just shake hands with John Smith and say, I'll give you $10 on Friday, is that money? Well, you see, it becomes pretty clear that we're dealing with something at its root that is fundamentally spiritual. And if money is spiritual, then it is sheer folly to attempt to get hold of some without employing spiritual strategies, without at least knowing the impact that spiritual strategies are going to have? Impossible. So we need to look at a couple of those. Well, if money is spiritual, how about a business? Well, take a look at it for a moment. Look how many different categories of people benefit from somebody who starts up a business. Firstly, the owner himself, the person who creates the business, benefits. Secondly, his customers benefit. Yes, those storekeepers in Watts. Yes, their customers benefited. And the proof is how miserable they were after the riots and the stores never came back. Those stores were good for them. Then we've got the people who supply that store. Vendors who make a living filling the needs of that business. And how about the employees of the business who had jobs? And that's also something the Los Angeles Times reports on, by the way, that a whole lot of jobs for young people vanished because these stores used to employ young people from the neighborhood. So employees benefit. And then shareholders who help to finance the business, well, they benefit. And so you see that here is an entity that benefits a number of different categories of people. Obviously, this is a very good thing. And not only is it a good thing, but it's spiritual in the sense that I could come to you and say, listen, would you please lend me $10 and I'll give you back $12 next Monday? Because I'm short of money today, but I'll have plenty next Monday because I'll be paid or whatever it is. And so $10 is worth more to me today than $12 on Monday. But this is only true for human beings. There is no way, if one can even stretch one's imagination, that a dog would relinquish a bone he's gnawing on in exchange for two bones in a week's time. It's not possible. That's just not something dogs can do, because the treating of differing values in the passage of time is, again, a spiritual attribute. And so I want to look at, or more than look at, I want to leave you with three very specific spiritual tools that I hope will be useful in whatever you do. If you are an entrepreneur, you have a business, that's great. But like most people, you are probably an employee of someone else's business. That may be true, but it still helps to begin to see yourself as a business. When you see yourself as a business, you begin to automatically be able to answer questions that may baffle you otherwise. Sometimes you're working and there's a merger of departments or of companies, whatever it is, you find yourself with three times more work than you used to do, and yet nothing's happened to your pay. Now, how do you deal with that? Well, if you don't think of yourself as an employee, but you think of yourself as a business owner of you incorporated, insert your own name for the you incorporated, you start realizing that you are a business entity supplying either labor or skills or experience or whatever it is your job is in that company. And the question is whether now that there's so much more demand for your services, can you raise your prices? Well, raising your prices is just a more accurate way of describing asking for a raise. And so it is many other questions begin to resolve themselves once you do understand that you are a business and nobody else in the whole world cares as much about your financial welfare as you do. And by the way, from a moral perspective, that's exactly the way it ought to be. And so we'll take a quick break. Before that, again, I want to tell you about the special code at the website, rabbidaniellappin.com. Go over to the store section of the website. And what happens is that right now, for listeners of the show, for the next few days, there's free shipping, which means you can order books that normally weigh a lot and cost money to ship. But now you can get them for free. It's like having your own Prime service at RabbiDanielLappin.com. And I want you to take a look at some of the books, depending where your interests lie. There are two crucial financial books, Business Secrets from the Bible and Thou Shall Prosper. You may have read one already. You may have read none of them. Go ahead. Maybe there's somebody in your family or in your circle of influence that desperately needs a reset on their financial outlook. Somebody whose financial destiny needs to be changed for the remainder of this year. Well, get them a book. Easy. And you may be interested in the Lord's language. You may be interested in some of the ways that Hebrew reveals its divine origins, the ways in which it differs from any other language. Well, there's a book called Buried Treasure. There are also three volumes of Thought Tools. Anyway, you can read about them. Take a look at them more carefully at RabbiDanielLappin.com. And if you decide to get something, which I hope you will, because it'll make both of us happy, you will use the discount code SHIPFREE. And that will give you your order without any shipping costs. And that is a great deal. Quick break. Be back in a moment with three specific spiritual strategies for building your business. Remember, whether you are literally in business for yourself or whether you are an employee learning to see yourself as being your own company, these three useful strategies coming right up.
There's still more to come from Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Pat Gray.
These Democratic hellholes. When are they going to learn? If you keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result, what is that? It's insanity.
Are you insinuating that poop in the streets is not a good policy?
You know, I'm picky enough to prefer the poop, especially human feces, to go into a sewer system.
Pat Gray. Weekdays noon to 3 Eastern. Only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Blaze Radio Network, on demand, with Rabbi Daniel Lappin.
So, here we are then, I think reasonably clear on the underlying principle that if you think we're here because primitive protoplasm turned into piano tuners and potato chip processors through a process of nothing but random evolution, well, then you are going to have a materialistic outlook. And for you, money is a cause of resentment. Its mechanism of coming into being is obscure. But if, on the other hand, your reality is that human beings are spiritual entities wrapped up in bodies, well, then all of this makes sense in every way. And so let's look now at three ways in which a person who is spiritually conscious and spiritually aware can improve their business performance, increase their revenue, experience, and bring about growth. How do you do it? Well, rule number one, okay, and you may call this Rabbi Daniel Lappin's rule for biblical economic growth number one. Make a covenantal commitment to build your business. And remember, that applies even if you see yourself as an employee, which you're going to stop doing. Here's the problem. If you really do want to grow your business, you want to increase your revenue, it has to be a priority. And the priority, the word priority is a singular word. You know that, right? Anyone says, I got four priorities, is talking nonsense. It's abusing the English language beyond anything it was meant to sustain. Priority is only one thing. And so the problem is if I say that building your business has to be your priority, well, it becomes a problem because you'll turn around quite legitimately to me and say, well, wait a second, my family is my priority. My faith is my priority. I have other things. And you're right. You're absolutely right. Your family does come before everything. But, and your faith, yeah, that's also a priority. So what do we do? Because there's a huge trap here. If you don't put things that have to be dealt with at the top of the page, first thing in the morning, then there's always going to be something else that takes precedence and the important things don't get done. And you got to remember that the important thing is that the important thing stays the important thing. So how do you deal with the fact that you want to focus on building your business, but you also have to focus on your family, you also have to focus on your faith? Well, the answer is a covenantal commitment. What's the difference between a contract and a commitment? Well, you know that. A contract is a promise between two parties. But a covenant involves at least one other party. So that's one of the reasons that we always speak about the holy covenant of marriage. Why don't we just say the contract of marriage, which is what it really is, right? A man and a woman making an agreement to be exclusive to one another, etc., etc. Why do we say covenant? Because most people realize that marriage involves three parties, the bride, the groom, and God, in whose eyes the couple is married. But you know what? Marriage also involves covenantal relationships with siblings and the in-laws and friends, which, by the way, is why divorce, when it tragically happens, impacts the entire family, not just the husband and wife. It's a calamity for everybody because the original connection was through covenant. Well, when you make a covenantal commitment to build your business, you're involving your family and perhaps God as well. So you can bring everyone in on your commitment. This way, they're not only witnesses to your commitment, but also facilitators to you in keeping that commitment. In other words, keep those who are most important to you in the picture. Let them know in an almost official, formal way. You know, you could have board meetings, except there really are family meetings, but they have to do with business. So they're a board meeting. And you tell your spouse and your children what the plans are, what the timeline is, what you're intending to do to bring about these results. Ask them for advice, ask them for ways in which they could help, update them regularly on successes and setbacks. And they will want you to succeed. And because they're part of the covenant, your success is also their success. And that way, you can integrate your life around your priority. Will there be times you have to disconnect from work and just spend special time with your spouse or with your children? Yeah, of course. Will there be special times you spend time with your in prayer with your church fellows? Sure, absolutely. But you will return to business in a renewed and revitalized and refreshed way. Now let's come to Rabbi Daniel Lappin, rule number two. Know what you do for people and proudly proclaim it. Right? Know what you do for people and let people know about it. When we serve other people, it's a way of serving God. It's a way of serving God's other children. And in the same way that you are happy when other people do nice things for your children, God is happy when we do nice things for his other children. That's called customer service. But now you have to make certain that everyone in your circle, everyone you meet, every new friend you make, knows what you could do for them. I don't mean that you must become obnoxious and self-promote yourself constantly. No, it's just that everybody should be aware of what it is that you do for your fellow human beings. That way, job offers come your way, deals and transactions come your way, opportunities to serve other people come your way. You know, there was a time when Jews used to only use names that indicated what their occupations were. So goldsmith, silverman, wasserman, used to be the village water supplier, by the way, and so on, and fetterman. I mean, there are so many Jewish names. that come from the occupations that the owners of those names practiced. And that way, it was like walking around with your business card stapled to your forehead. Whoever you introduced yourself to or whomever you were introduced to immediately knew what business you're in just because of your name. Well, that's a terrific system. I'm not suggesting we adopt that. But I am insisting that we don't be coy about what we do. We let people know about it. And you should sound enthusiastic and excited about it, even more enthusiastic and more excited than maybe you really are. But that's still worth doing. And so this is one of the reasons that, you know, when you meet somebody for the first time, whether it's sitting next to somebody on an airplane or a bus or whatever it is, start talking. Very often the first question people ask is, you know, what do you do? And really the question they're asking, the hidden question is, how do you help other human beings? And once you've clarified for people just how it is you can help them, you'd be surprised how often people will approach you. This is the secret to the noble art of advertising. Just how you do it, of course, is something that you will figure out. But please give it serious and creative thought. And then finally, let's come to the last of the rules for this particular show. I said I was going to give you three. There are many, many others, many of which are found, by the way, in the books I was talking about on my website, Business Secrets from the Bible. The subtitle there is Success Strategies, Spiritual Success Strategies for Financial Abundance. And the other one, Thou Shalt Prosper, the Ten Commandments for Making Money. But anyway, here's the last one for today. Develop your most important business-building organ. Now, what is your most important business-building organ? It's your mouth. Because business happens when human beings communicate, collaborate, and create. And all of that takes place when the mouth has the ability to effectively communicate. And so being able to hold a conversation, being able to talk compellingly about what you do and what you can do, all of this becomes incredibly valuable in building your business. And so how do you do that? Well, there are a number of ways to improve your ability to communicate. One of them is all I'm going to have time to share with you for today, but it will, I guarantee you, dramatically improve your ability to communicate. What you have to do is very simple. It's a little bit, makes you feel a little self-conscious, but what you need to do is you need to practice 3 times a week, half an hour every time, minimum, right? An hour and a half a week divided into 3 times, half an hour each, reading aloud from a good book. It could be the good book if you want, but it could be any good book. And pick a book that sounds the way you wished you would sound. Okay? So for heaven's sake, you know, don't pick up a trashy novel. And then you go ahead, lock yourself somewhere away privately where no one will disturb you, and go ahead and read aloud. Because when your own ears hear your own tongue and mouth and lips articulating those words, your fluency, your vocabulary, your ease, your gift of the gab, as they usually say, it's right around the corner. It's amazing how quickly you will see the results of this. You're basically giving your mouth a communicative workout 3 times a week. And just like any other muscle in the body, practice makes it stronger. And furthermore, as I said, your ears start hearing yourself, and that builds a loop, a feedback loop back into your brain. And this, by the way, is exactly how Abraham Lincoln transformed himself from a timid and ineffective speaker into the man who delivered the Gettysburg Address. So those are the three steps based on the spirituality of business, and they are really very important. The first one is that internal one of making that commitment to success in a way that cannot fail, In other words, engaging your partners, both human and divine, in a covenantal commitment. That's number one. Number two, make sure that you tell others of your eagerness and your ability to serve them. Right? I always say that that one of the main causes of poverty, and it disturbs people when I say it because it's true, and the truth sometimes hurts, but one of the main contributors to poverty is not capitalism or racism or government or systemic anything. No, it's an inability to get up every morning and get to work on time and smile at customers and take orders cheerfully from a boss and deliver more than you're asked to do. Failure and inability to do those things, particularly being able to take orders cheerfully. People can't do that today. A lot of people can't do that. And so if you're not able to reveal your eagerness to serve others, well, it's not going to work. And then finally, one of the most spiritual tools that we have is our ability to talk, our ability to communicate. And that is our mouth. And I've shared with you today one way of improving its effectiveness. Please give it a shot. I know not everybody's going to do these things, obviously, but I will tell you that those of you who do, within 4 to 6 weeks, are going to truly be astounded, as will people you interact with who will notice it. And I'd love you to drop me a note. You can do it most easily at my website at rabbidaniellappin.com. There's a contact us. And I wish you would let me know how that goes. Would you do that? Here are three principles, and you can implement them. It doesn't matter if you own a business or if you work in somebody else's business, but these are three tools you can implement for expanding your growth and your revenue. It really, really does work, and I'd love to hear from you after you've applied these principles and derived the benefit that they deliver in your business affairs. So please do go to rabbidaniellappin.com and let me know how things are going. I find it enormously encouraging when I hear from you with testimonials, in a sense, where basically you confirm that I have served you. That's what we're talking about. That's the goal. And while you're at the website, rabbidaniellappin.com, not only to send me a note, but also to take a look at the books that are available at the store, and be aware that for the next few days, for listeners of this show, free delivery, free shipping. You don't have to spend money on getting them to you. And the code to use for that is SHIPFREE, one word, right? SHIPFREE. And you just enter that at the checkout process, and you will not be charged for shipping. RabbiDanielLappin.com is the website, and there are books on marriage, there are books on money, there are books on faith. There's a lot of stuff there, not as much as there will be by the end of the year, but right now there's a bunch of stuff, and you will unquestionably find something that is valuable to you, and when you do, you will acquire it and make you happy and me, both of us at the same time. And what could be better than that? Well, that's as far as we can go, unfortunately, for today, my friends. And so that means that until next week, I wish you a week of good health and prosperity. I'm Rabbi Daniel Lappin. God bless.
This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.